now more than ever, you need a source of news you can trust. And you have such a source in WYPR. Members are our most important source of funding, and we need you now more than ever so we can continue to keep you informed amid the pandemic with honest, accurate journalism. You can make a pledge at WYPR.org. If you're a sustaining member, consider an additional gift or increasing your monthly pledge. We could not be here without you, and we thank you so much.
This is Anibon Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report. Americans are presently carrying more consumer debt than ever before, but for now, don't seem to be suffering much difficulty managing it. As indicated in the Wall Street Journal, consumer debt, which includes credit cards, auto loans, student loans, and personal loans, but not mortgage debt, is on pace to top $4 trillion in 2019. For its part, the level of mortgage debt is approaching levels last seen during the housing meltdown. At the end of last year's third quarter, homeowners owed more than $10 trillion on mortgages. That was up by nearly 3% from a year earlier, according to Federal Reserve data. Mortgage debt peaked at closer to $11 trillion in early 2008. Despite the ongoing accumulation of consumer debt in recent years, there are few indications that consumers are feeling significant strain. Delinquency rates on most forms of debt remain low, and a strong economy has helped push the personal savings rate as a percentage of disposable income to 6.3%, above its 20-year average of 5.9%, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report. Many economists favor the notion of global trade. Trade creates efficiencies as producers and nations focus upon those activities in which they enjoy some form of advantage. This results in generally higher levels of production and consumption. But trade can also cause significant dislocation as workers in certain industries find their domestic industries shrinking. In response, many nations maintain retraining programs to help displaced workers secure new work. But as indicated by writer Eric Morath, retraining has often failed to deliver as planned. A key program in America is known as Trade Adjustment Assistance, or TAA, which was instituted during the 1960s. The program supplies extended unemployment benefit payments and job training to workers who the government determines lost their jobs due to overseas competition. Multiple studies indicate that many workers who leave the program earn less than they did at their former jobs. According to the U.S. Labor Department, on average, workers earn about 81% of the wages they received in their old jobs 3 to 6 months after exiting TAA. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday Morning Economic Report. One of America's largest industries is the auto industry. Though there has been a considerable amount of chatter recently regarding slower industry growth, annual sales encompassed 17.3 million new cars and light trucks last year, which was up nearly a full percentage point from 2017's sales volume. As indicated by writer Neil Boudet, last year represented the fourth consecutive year that sales exceeded the 17 million threshold, the lengthiest such streak the industry has ever recorded. But peer beneath the headline numbers, and there is reason for concern. Last year's sales increase was driven in large measure by loftier sales to rental, government, and corporate fleets. Sales to individual consumers, which many economists deem a more accurate representation of demand, were flat, according to Edmunds, an auto retail data provider. Sales to individual consumers could continue to dip as enticing loan deals disappear. Interest-free loans, for instance, accounted for just 5.5% of all finance plans offered by dealers in December. That was the lowest level for any December since 2005. Moreover, Tesla sales more than tripled in 2018. Without that, industry sales would have actually declined. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday Morning Economic Report. Innovators from around the nation have been striving to improve healthcare outcomes in America through innovation. As indicated by CNBC, In 2018, venture investors from Silicon Valley, Boston, and elsewhere poured billions of dollars into the healthcare sector, financing things like virtual care solutions, wearables, medication management applications, and new tools that permit physicians to engage with their patients between visits. That all sounds terrific, but recent reports from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention indicate that life expectancy in America is falling for the first time in decades, and it could get worse. Millennials are overweight at a level that has them on pace to be members of the most obese generation in the nation's history. And despite anti-tobacco campaigns, smoking remains a problem contributing to chronic lower respiratory diseases. Why are the myriad emerging technologies that are being developed to improve the quality of healthcare yet to generate significantly better outcomes? There are many reasons, but perhaps the most obvious is that many of these technologies remain in their infancy. Much of the investment in digital health, for instance, began just 5 to 7 years ago. For WYPR and my esteemed producer, Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Friday Morning Economic Report. Recently, there has been a lot of attention placed on the need to air condition more schools. It turns out that air conditioning schools isn't just good for keeping students, staff, and faculty more comfortable. It actually contributes to better academic outcomes. According to an analysis circulated by the National Bureau of Economic Research, when outside temperatures exceed 70 degrees, learning appears to suffer. However, the study also indicates that well-functioning air conditioning can almost entirely offset the impact of heat. These conclusions are based on an analysis of approximately 10 million American students who took the preliminary SAT or PSAT more than once between 1998 and 2012. As indicated by the Wall Street Journal, the study links weather station data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration with test data from the College Board, which administers the PSAT to high school students, usually during their 10th and 11th grade each fall. The researchers found that every 1 degree Fahrenheit increase in the average temperature during the school year reduces learning by approximately 1%, especially hot days were especially damaging, while cold days have little effect on test scores. For WYPR and my esteemed producer, Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.